Hi, y'all. Welcome to the second episode of ET After Dark, Devil Emoji. I'm Chrissy, your... Can I just say host instead of, like, co-host?
Sure.
All right, I'm going to steal your thunder. I am one of your hosts, and I'm going to pass it over to Jesse.
Yeah, my name is Jesse, obviously, and I'm going to throw it to our guest so he can introduce himself.
Well, hi, everybody. I'm Caden Brooks. I'm from the greatest state in the union of Oklahoma. I'm 18, about to get out of high school. I'm happy to be here.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for being here. To be completely honest, this is like going to be super interesting because I feel like I don't know anything about Oklahoma politics and it's like right there. So,
yeah.
Well, not really right there. Texas is huge, so.
Well, you know what? It's only like an hour and 45 minutes to get to like Windstar.
I have no idea what that meant.
Windstar's a casino that like everybody that turns 18 goes to, like literally on the day that they turn 18. It's like a rite of passage in Texas.
Yeah.
At least in like my high school.
I'm pretty for sure that's where the dude from Tiger King is building his new park, right by it. Somewhere up there. Wow. Down there, I should say. Because he ended up buying, it was the Jeff Lowe dude. He ended up buying, I think it's like 500 acres down there. He's going to put a whole new park down there.
Oh my gosh, I did not even know that.
Yeah.
All right, so take it away. Tell us the highlights of Oklahoma politics.
Well, I mean, you know, Oklahoma is a very, very, very red state. But you know, we have some very interesting state elections. So I figured we could talk about, you know, the upcoming 2022 elections. Let's talk about possible candidates, the controversy around Governor Stitt and his tribal relations and COVID response and all that, and how that might affect him in 2022. And I figured we could also talk about Oklahoma 5, because I know everybody's interested in that nowadays. So yeah.
Is Governor Stitt the one who put out that photo of him and his son at like a restaurant in March?
Yeah, that was him. Yeah, he deleted it. I think it was the day after. But yeah, it was everywhere. Because I remember I saw that. I'm like, Jesus Christ, dude, you're literally telling everybody to, you know, order takeout. And you're with like three of your sons in Oklahoma City in a packed restaurant. Like how hypocritical or is this dumb? Like, why? But, you know, that's just it. You know, I will say this. I supported him in 2018. But my politics back then was very different than it is today. But I have just been very disappointed with how he has handled a lot of stuff since he's been in office.
What does it look like in Oklahoma right now in terms of, like, COVID restrictions? Sorry.
You know, very, very light. You know, certain cities have put mask mandates in place, like Tulsa, Oklahoma City, some of the suburbs around both metros also have mask mandates. But other than that, you know, you have Governor Stitt saying, you know, he's encouraging people to wear masks, social distancing and all that, but he's not putting any true effort into actually changing the tide right now. He's not willing to put a mask mandate in place. And he recently put it to where bars and restaurants had to close like at 11. But that has been the most recent thing he has done. And pretty for sure he changed some of that up as well. But I'd have to look at the specific of that. But yeah, in 2022, you know, due to COVID and just his whole tribal response, and that was a whole you know, just crazy, I would say about 4 or 5 months. It really ended about last month with him going after tribal casinos and constantly attacking tribal sovereignty. He's going to have a very interesting primary in 2022, and I actually wrote down some notes about that because I figured you might want to talk about that as well. But that's totally up to y'all.
Yeah, let's do it.
So, you know, Kevin Stitt won in 2018, but he barely won because he had to go to that runoff. I remember because I was at his watch party there in 2018. And that was a very interesting night because nobody really thought that he would end up being first, second place. Everybody knew it was going to go to a runoff either between Nick Cornett, who was the mayor of Oklahoma City, or Todd Lamb, who was the lieutenant governor at the time. But Stitt barely edged out Lamb that night, and his numbers really just came in the final hours of the election that night. He got a big boost, when Tulsa really came in for him, which he's from Jinx, and that's a Tulsa suburb. So he was able to beat out Lamb then, and then he beat Cornett in the runoff. And then he went to the general, you know, beat Edmondson, and that wasn't really even close. It was by 11%, if I remember correctly. And he really just faced, you know, hard challenges then. And in 2022, you know, like I said, due to tribal sovereignty, COVID, and, you know, he's also just gone after rural Oklahoma. And, you know, I've always said there's three rules in Oklahoma politics. The most important is don't go after the tribes. Number two would be don't go after oil and gas. And three would be don't go after rural Oklahoma. He's broken two of those three rules. Three, if you want to include oil and gas, because the tribes control a lot of that here. But I don't really count that. So, you know, in 2022, he already has most likely one confirmed primary opponent. He's a former state senator named Irvin Yin. He's from Oklahoma City. He used to hold, it was state Senate district like 40 or something like that. But a Democrat holds that seat now, won that in 2018. But he is a big healthcare guy. His main focus right now is to run against him over Stitt's failed COVID responses. But, you know, I don't really think he would have any big effect in that primary. But Stitt's biggest, you know, fear right now is Joy Hoffmeister, who was the superintendent of public instruction, who's term limited. She's, you know, widely popular by, you know, Republicans, Democrats, Independents. Everybody loves her in the state. And if she could win in the main primary, she could easily beat Stitt as long as she can make it to where a runoff does not take place. And if that happened, you know, the seat would definitely be safer if she was able to beat Stitt in the primary. If not, you know, Stitt is one of maybe two Republicans in the state who can make the governor's race likely are. And it really also depends on the Democrat. At this point, it will probably be Dan Boren, who was a former congressman from Oklahoma too. He left in like 2012, I think. But he is fairly conservative. The tribes love him. Rural Oklahoma loves him. So he would definitely be kind of a Drew Edmondson type candidate, but he could probably do 1 to 2% better.
Right. So one thing that, like, obviously, like, you know a lot about, like, who's running, or like possible candidates, Democratic and Republican. But one thing that has, like, stuck out to me while you were talking was, like, you said that you went to his 2017 watch party. Yeah. So as somebody that has always just been really involved in, like, Democratic circles, like, I've never, like, I, you know, I've always been a Democrat. So, like, what are Republican circles like for, like, a Gen Zer? Wanted to know.
I don't know. I mean, like I said, Oklahoma politics is very interesting. You have all these different factions. You have your hardcore Trump people. So kind of they would be kind of like your Stitt people. And then you have your just typical conservatives, kind of like Mary Fallon. When I was still a Republican, and that was as recent as like 2-3 months ago, but I was more involved in, you know, that Stitt type circles, and his party was picture like suburban white wine moms and dads. That was his watch party, mixed together with, you know, random teens who were probably being paid a whole lot of money to work for him. And there were most of them were from out of state as well. Because he had a lot of money coming in, and he used a lot of his personal money because he was a millionaire. He ran a insurance company that was also very corrupt at the time. and still is. But it, I mean, Republican circles, you know, just judging from my, you know, very, very small amount of time of being in certain Democratic circles, you know, there's a different policy wise, but when it comes to the makeup, it kind of feels the same. But then again, that's just my opinion on it. So who knows what hell someone else would feel about it.
Right. That's really interesting to hear. Cause like I said, I just have had like my, I don't want to say like my safe blue bubble because I am still like a Democrat in the South, but like it's been pretty, pretty, you know, like-minded, I mean, like, you know, for me. So,
yeah.
I think one thing a lot of us on ET were disappointed to see was Kendra Horn losing in November. What do you think the future holds for her?
Well, you know, I've actually, there's an Oklahoma ET chat. Not that many people are in it. But I was talking to them about it. It probably comes up every once or 2 weeks. But right now, I would say she has probably two options. Her top option for her would probably be getting NASA under Biden because she's been in the aerospace industry for a very long time. And, you know, she's the chairwoman of the aeronautics subcommittee. I forgot the full name. And then Oklahoma is really just a hub of aerospace, and NASA have focused a lot of stuff here, and she has those connections. If she can't get that, then she'll probably end up going back to her nonprofit. Because, you know, after this, I really just don't see her getting involved in politics unless she gets the NASA spot.
You think she's too liberal, not rural enough for the governor's office?
You know, I think her vote impeachment would kill her off. You know, even Drew Edmondson, he was fairly liberal for Oklahoma. You could use his rural health care policies for an example, but he was able to get that 42% because he focused on state politics and not federal. You know, he was Oklahoma's attorney general for 10 plus years, and that really helped him out there. But with Kendra Horn, you know, with all the attack ads that came in 2018, and you know, I'm not going to blame certain factions of the Democratic Party for it, but that really did hurt her. You know, in her race and any of her really future ambitions. And I really don't think she would want to run for governor in 2022 anyways. But that's just judging from people I've talked to who are close to her and just know her fairly well.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I know when we were talking about like moderate candidates, what do you think, like, okay, well, first of all, like, who was your most progressive candidate, like, running this cycle?
Oh, this cycle? It was probably a state house candidate by the name of Marie Turner. She was elected, she won the primary down in, it was an Oklahoma City House district, and she's the first Muslim Oklahoma legislator. She was endorsed by Ilhan Omar, for example, and a lot of other progressive groups. So she was probably the most progressive. Other than that, there's really not that many. Because, you know, progressive standards by Oklahoma, you know, even Abby Broyles was a progressive, but she was more of a progressive light. So, you know, even, you know, if an Oklahoma says, oh, this person's progressive, chances are it's not that progressive.
Right. And, you know, there's always the argument, like, I see this especially on election Twitter after any election. It's like, oh, you know, a more moderate candidate would have won or a more progressive candidate would have won. And I sort of just want to know, like, your take on it. It's like, in the South, in a very, very red state, do you think that being like unapologetically progressive is better than being moderate?
You know, I think it just really depends on the area of the state. You know, like in Oklahoma City, if you're running for a state house or state senate seat, you know, you could be more progressive, but let's say you're running for Oklahoma 5, you definitely have to be more moderate. Because, you know, for example, Kendra Horn was really the only Democrat who could win Oklahoma 5 in 2018 and even in 2020. And if you had a more progressive candidate in Oklahoma 5, you know, you just would not have been able to even win by 1-2%. It would have been a very large loss. And, you know, I don't blame progressives or anybody else for Horn's loss. I think it's mainly because of COVID, because she had a Stop Her Ground campaign and many Democratic campaigns did that. I think that was very unfortunate. That they, you know, most of them really didn't try to find ways to be able to go out and knock doors with wearing masks, social distancing and all that. Because in a district like Oklahoma 5, you have to have a strong ground campaign in order to win. And Bice had that. And, you know, I know people who worked for the Bice campaign and they were very successful with getting people who voted for Horn in 2018 to come back to them because of their ground campaign.
Right. Yeah. I've been thinking about that even more lately, is like how, you know, not being able to go door to door has really hurt Democrats. That's something that I like at first, right after Election Day, I was like, yeah, no, you know, I don't think it really hurt us that bad. But now looking at it, I'm like, yeah, maybe so.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, if it wasn't for COVID, you know, the chances of Horn winning were still, you know, very, very, you know, just in the red, I guess you could say. But I she could have pulled off a 1-2% win. You know, she wasn't ever going to get biased numbers at 4%. But, you know, that ground campaign was really won Horn over in 2018. And she just really, you know, missed out on opportunities this year.
Did you see it? Like, did you like see her win coming in 2018? Or is that just like a super big surprise?
And, you know, I think a lot of people were surprised, because I remember, and I was at another state watch party. It was election night, so it was more of a state GOP type thing. But I just remember when it happened, there were like literal gasps in the room, like very loudly as well. I think I have a video of it too. But you know, everybody was surprised. I know a lot of Democrats were surprised, because it's Oklahoma. We haven't had a Democratic representative, you know, in Oklahoma 5 in a very long time. And, you know, Oklahoma City has been changing very slowly to becoming more Democratic. But 2018 was kind of that year when most of the dam was broken. And, you know, you had many Democrats win in and around Oklahoma City. There were a lot of, you know, strong Republican state Senate and House seats that flipped because of, and, you know, 2018 was that, you know, blue wave year. But Oklahoma City, it finally changed. And the question is, you know, how fast will it be for the county to flip on a presidential level, since it didn't happen this year, or what will it look like in 2022 in the governor's race and so on? Because even the Senate race in 2022, Oklahoma City is going to be very interesting, because James Lankford, he's from there. So the question is, can he hold it with whoever goes up against him? So it's going to be very interesting to watch how Oklahoma City politics play out in the next 2-3 years.
Yeah. So another thing that I'm like really interested in is like young voter turnout. How do you think that, like, you know, I know that y'all have like two major universities there. How do you think that Democrats specifically can, you know, rally out the youth vote?
Well, you know, I don't want to bash Oklahoma, the Oklahoma Democratic Party, too much. You know, the nicest thing for me to say is that they suck when organizing real votes out. And, you know, there's a lot of internal problems in the state party. It's slowly improved, but I don't have really any confidence in the state party when it comes to getting voters out to vote. Now, Abby Broyles, she was a Senate candidate this year. She founded a nonprofit organization that is dedicated to getting, you know, college students, high school students out to vote. So we'll just have to see how that plays out in 2022. I hope it goes well. her main focus will be on college campuses. So I really hope that has some type of effect, because youth turnout this year, it fell, I believe it was 16 or 17% here in Oklahoma. So it fell a whole lot.
Damn, that's actually, that's pretty depressing.
I might be wrong on the numbers, but I'm pretty for sure it was around 15, 16 or so, if I remember correctly. But it was a large drop. And it's crazy to think that it was that large in this year when we have the most votes in a presidential election. But it's just crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be... Oh.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's going to be really interesting to see how... Democrats, you know, really switch their messaging around after all the backlash that they're getting from this year, because, you know, Biden did so well, and then, you know, all the down ballot candidates underperformed. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see that, especially in like very red states.
Yeah. And, you know, going back to my comment on the Oklahoma Democratic Party, you know, there are many states like Oklahoma that are just deep red, but there are ways for the Democratic Party to get that percentage up, you know, especially in state level elections for like governor and so on. You know, in Oklahoma, we have, you know, 37 tribes, and most of them are reliably Democratic for the most part. And, you know, if the Democratic Party here can really just get them at the vote, you know, that could really help them. So I'm really looking forward to see how 2022 plays out, especially since Stitt has been, you know, so anti-tribal. Will they actually come out to vote? Because the thing about tribes is a lot of them, they will vote in tribal elections, but they will never vote in state or federal elections, hardly ever. We've seen that tide kind of turn, and I really hope that continues to turn. But that could really help Oklahoma Democrats out a whole lot.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear. One thing I wanted to ask you about is your two senators, James Lankford and Jim, how do you pronounce his name? Inhofe. Can you like give us a crash course on them? Because they're like backbenchers, basically. We don't hear a lot about them.
Yeah. You know, James Lankford, I kind of have a bias with him. He's a family friend. You know, I think he's a great guy. I definitely disagree with him on policy. But, you know, overall, just a great guy. You know, he is a former youth pastor. He headed up Falls Creek, which is one of the larger youth camps or Christian youth camps in the nation. He's, you know, fairly conservative, but, you know, the mega crowd, America First people really don't like him that much. They want somebody to primary him, which probably won't happen. And then we have Inhofe on the other hand, who is the dude who supports racial profiling and, just as, you know, I don't want to say he's far right, but he's more of a, this old timey old dude conservative who has, racist tendencies, and it's just very sad. And, you know, Inhofe, it's crazy to think just how much influence he actually has as the chair of the Armed Service Committee. I guess hope he leaves that soon, which he actually might leave in 2022, because there's rumors of him saying that he wants to step down so Stitt can have his seat, so Stitt doesn't have to face a tough primary for governor. But we'll just have to see how that plays out.
Wow, that's really fascinating to hear. Yep. I'm just going to apologize real quick for calling Inhofe a backbencher.
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, he stays quiet, but I don't know if I would consider him a backbencher per se. I guess it just depends on, you know, who you ask. But, you know, even back to this year, you know, Inhofe wants to get out of there. I think he's done. He's just getting older. And I think he just wants to live his life, because, you know, it took him forever to announce he was running again this year, because usually he would announce, you know, right away, but it took him months. So I think he was, you know, really going out there looking for someone to replace him. And I just don't think he could find anybody. But that's just how I view it. I could be totally wrong. I could be right. Who knows? But.
Yeah, we're coming up on 30 minutes here. So, Chrissy, do you have rapid fire questions?
Oh my gosh. Okay. I really, really tried on these. Jesse kind of put a lot of pressure on me because he was like, come up with more. and I think I came up with less. So, all right, let's get started on these. Not all of these are about politics, by the way.
Okay.
Okay. All right. What's your go-to Sonic drink?
Oh, Jesus Christ. I just get their Dr. Pepper.
Oh my gosh, not ocean water? No. All right.
Sucks.
Texas, Kansas, or Arkansas?
Arkansas.
Oh my gosh. He's just like hurting my heart right now. All right. Who's your favorite map maker on ET?
Oh, Jesus Christ. This is a hard one. I'm going to go with Miles.
Wow. I always come on here and like try to start some mess. All right. OU or OSU?
OSU.
Okay. What's your the funniest moment on ET that you remember?
I don't want to say anything. It's just going to start up some stuff. I really don't want to go.
All right.
I would have everybody in my comment section, and I don't want that.
Oh. All right. Then what's your favorite subsection of ET?
Oh, Oklahoma, 100%. Nothing beats Oklahoma. I might be biased, but we have some very cool people here.
Who are the other Oklahoma people?
Oh, you have Chris, I know, I guess you could say Ted Edmondson, kind of. I know he doesn't live in Oklahoma, but he's very involved in it. And then, you know,
I was just going to say, I love how election Twitter people like are from somewhere, but then they like adopt another state, like Jackson adopted Kansas.
Yeah. And, yeah, no. You know, terrible game. So don't ask me. I can tell you faces, but I can't give you names.
That's fair.
But yeah, it's not that big. But we have, there's probably like 15, 20 of us that are active, I would say.
But, that's big enough to start discourse. All right. Those are all the questions that I had. And then like Jesse added in like an extra one.
Yeah. I think this was a good conversation.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, just pay attention to, you know, Oklahoma politics in 2022, especially the GOP primaries, because they're going to be very interesting. You know, Democratic primaries here are going to be interesting as well. But I would just say pay attention. You know, it's a red state. But, you know, if you want to learn more about, you know, factions of each party, I feel like Oklahoma is probably one of the best places to learn about them.
Yeah, and right. Even in like deep red, deep blue states, whichever faction wins still has a lot of impact on policy. So
yeah,
pay attention to. Want to close this out, Chrissy?
Sure. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here, Kevin. Thank you for giving us your time and your knowledge on Oklahoma politics.
Yeah.
And thank you all for listening to ET After Dark Episode 2. Next week, in 2 weeks, we'll be back with something even cooler. So, yeah.
No offense to you, Caden.
Oh, no. I'm just saying it always gets better. It's always going to get better.
Glad, boring. I get it.
No. I'm just setting expectations high for no reason.
I just want to say one last thing. People, you know, love Texas so much, but Texas wasn't able to hold on to their panhandle. That's just how weak they are.
What am I supposed to say to this? I think I just cry. All right. Let's not start mess on the podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. And thank you again, Caden, for being here.
Yeah.
Jesse, any last words?
Nope.
All right. Bye, everybody.